It's The Bill Murphy Show. A daily one-on-one 30-minute interview featuring people from all walks of life. Available daily at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
And this is your digital broadcast for Wednesday. Not August anymore. September 1st, 2010. Welcome to September, everybody. Brought to you by Lulu's Bait Shack. Fresh Florida seafood, gigantic fishbowl drinks, and live music. Lulu's. In Beach Place on A1A in the heart of Fort Lauderdale Beach. Don't forget, September 4th is their annual hurricane party. And it might not be funny. I don't think the timing is going to be funny with that hurricane party this year over at Lulu's. We'll have to see what happens or what's going on in various parts of the country while that party's going on there. We apologize for running a couple of repeats for the last couple of days. You know, the studio got a little busy with some other stuff. I got my own, had to bump my own show for some other work that was going on in the studio the last couple of days. But we are back with another new show. And my guest today could fall under one of several different categories. I'm going to have to decide, I guess, by the way this interview goes, which category we're going to put him under. Stuart Barnett joins me. He's a Vero Beach resident, and we appreciate you coming all the way to the studio today, buddy.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bill. Thanks for having me.
All right, don't be shy. You were talking a lot louder than that just up until we started this thing. Now you get all in a shell here. Get right up on that mic. I know you've worked a mic before.
Yes, I have.
We'll get into that because what it is we're mainly going to talk about your profession, which is as a bail bondsman, but we also want to get into the fact that you're the penultimate sports fan. And what I mean by that is you have respect for every game. You love going to all the pro sports, and you especially love visiting the stadiums in the other cities and experiencing the majesty of some of the great ballparks and football stadiums out there. We'll get into that. And you're also a musician, so we could have had you on a Music Friday and done some stuff with your music over the years. You have tons of guitars, so we will get into all of the above. So
sounds good.
Let's start with the bail bondsman thing. A lot of stereotyping goes on when you talk about bail bondsman. The first thing that comes to my mind is Marscone from the Midnight Run movie, you know, with the guy running out to get donuts, and you got, deadlines to meet. How did you get into the business, first of all? I know it's Barnett Bail Bond, so I'm assuming it's a family business. How far back does the lineage go with that?
My father moved to Vero Beach in 81, opened up Barnett Bail Bonds in 87. Not sure why. It might have been because of my childhood. And
so, is there any family involvement before your dad?
No, not at all.
Oh, so he would be curious to find out how he got interested in doing it.
Well, I always ask him that, and I don't know, the money maker.
That's all he said? He's just a swift businessman, and that was a good way to do it.
Apparently.
It's a really good business?
It's very lucrative. We're one of four bondsmen in all of Indian River County.
And oh, well, there you go.
We do 95% of the business, if I do say so myself.
Okay. Well, that's family business, been around a long time, good reputation. So
absolutely.
Indian River County, relatively peaceful county, generally speaking?
If I was going to get thrown in a jail, I would prefer to be in Indian River County Jail in, let's say, Broward County.
Yeah, I think most definitely. So no episodes of Cops have been taped in Indian River County?
Well, no, but one of the terrorists lived on my block.
Is that so?
Yeah.
One of the guys in 9/11.
Yeah, the CNN and all the trucks were on my block. It was before I moved there, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
They were training to fly in Vero Beach. So
wow.
One of them rented a house on my block.
But yeah. North Perry Airport in Hollywood they were training too. Maybe somebody was there too.
There were many terrorists. One of them I know trained to fly in Vero Beach.
Okay. I wasn't doubting your facts. I was just throwing North Perry Airport out there.
It just happened that we were talking about it the other day that one of the terrorists lived on my block before I moved there.
Oof. Okay. That's kind of creepy. Yeah. But speaking of creepy, I want to get some stories. But first, how you got into the business? Was it something that your dad always told you he was going to sort of mold you into or hand down to you, or was it just something that you got curious about? How'd you end up in the business? Did you take a few other turns before you ended up going there?
Well, yes. As you know, I was a musician, and then there's not a lot of money in it unless you really make it. So I was in the restaurant business for quite a few years down in the Fort Lauderdale area.
I see.
And I decided I could have been a bail bondsman back in 87. I just didn't want to leave Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
You know, I'm a New York City guy, and Fort Lauderdale is a semi-big city.
You're a what guy?
A New York City guy.
I can't even imitate the way you say New York, because you do it in such a I don't know, a pure accent.
When you're from New York, you can't help it.
When you're from New York, I'm kind of saying it, but I'm not really saying it like you are. Is that a Long Island thing?
But yeah, I'm definitely from Long Island.
All right, there you go.
But
all right, so back to the story.
I lost where
you,
I was.
You didn't want to leave Fort Lauderdale. Yeah. You were doing the rock and roll thing, playing in the restaurant business, so Vero was too far to
You know, I was also working at Hooters. Who would want to leave that?
Okay. And there were no Hooters in Indian River County?
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure there were, but there wasn't a restaurant.
Okay.
But, so I decided I'd move up there and start making some real money, and it's very lucrative, as I said. I got some crazy stories I could tell you about it, but the biggest misconception is that I'm Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Right.
And
bail bondsmen are not in the bounty hunting business.
It's actually against the law to be a bounty hunter in the state of Florida.
Is it really?
Yes.
Interesting.
You have to be a licensed bail agent to go pick people up. Now, that's not to say that there are people who get into the business, get their licenses just to pick up people, because there are, but you have to be a licensed bail agent to go pick people up.
And you do have a few people that like on standby that fall under that category that will take care of business for you, so to speak?
Not really, because where I'm in Vero Beach, if you miss court, you have a warrant for your arrest. The cops find them before we even have to.
Right.
Very rarely do I have to go beat down someone's door and go drag someone to, you know, back to jail. It's a misconception. Maybe down here in Lauderdale a little more, but where I am, not really.
Okay, so you do have some good stories, though, that you started to tell me before, and I said, no, wait, save it for the interview. So,
well, this is for one instance. We had a woman, it was a mother bailed out her daughter, and she wanted to put her back in jail because she was doing drugs. And
mother
listening.
Bailed out the daughter, right. Then she wanted to put her daughter back in jail.
So she brought her to our office,
okay,
and we were going to handcuff her and bring her back to jail. Well, she decided she wanted to run. So I ended up having to chase this girl down the street.
How old of a girl are you talking about?
She was in her early, or about 19 years old.
Okay.
She did not want to go back to jail, needless to say. So
okay.
I ran across the street, and it's not that heavy a traffic of a street, but I didn't even look to see if there were cars coming. So I almost got hit by a car chasing this girl, and I had her cornered behind a building, and I had to drag her across the street to, you know, back to jail, crying. But, you know, chasing a girl down the street, it was pretty funny.
So you felt a little bit like a bounty hunter at that moment.
Yeah.
Stereotypical.
Yep. But, you know, you have to feel, I felt bad for her. You know, she doesn't want to go back to jail. Her own mother's throwing her back in jail, and she's in my office crying, begging, please don't put me back in jail. And I have to say, listen, your mother doesn't, you know, your mom is the one who signed for you. She wants you, she thinks that's the best place for you. And a lot of times it is, because a lot of these people who are addicted to drugs, that's the best place for them to be.
Yeah, probably was the only place she was going to really be clean.
And that's why the mother wanted her back in there, because she could sleep at night. And
well, that was sort of heroic.
Her three squares and
So that was your that was a pretty heroic little story. What else
have
you got?
Was
some other goofy stuff that's happened too?
Well,
I'm sure there's been some domestic situations, but something that has to do with husbands and wives or boyfriends and girlfriends.
Oh, we get caught in the middle of that all the time. When someone bonds someone out of jail, they like to use that over their head, and I'm just going to call the bondsman and have you thrown back in jail. And
they
stick us in the middle of you know, unless they break bond conditions, we're not going to put them back in jail.
I know. It's not your business anymore,
but
really,
they,
right?
They call us up, he's not washing the dishes or he's not doing his chores, I'm going to throw him back in jail. Well, that's not any grounds for us to put him back in jail, you know. I do have a funny story about a guy who I bonded out, who ended up back in jail within an hour of his release.
All right, so we're talking about somebody who got arrested, bailed out by you guys,
and within an hour was back in jail.
You got another call.
Yeah, he calls me, I'm back in.
You got to slow down and give me some more details on this now.
Okay. I'm not sure what it was. I don't know what he did. It was a $1,500 bond. His family came by. They paid us, got him out. It was a weekend. The tow truck companies up where I am are closed on the weekends. And he decided he was going to go to the tow truck company, get his stuff out of his car, except when he found out that the doors were locked to the place, he decided he was going to jump the fence and get in his car and take his stuff. Well, he was arrested for trespassing and brought back to the county jail within an hour. At that point in time, his family said, you're going to sit. Good luck. And
So you did not have to bail him out the second time?
No.
All right. That's
his family even realized that he should probably stay there if he's not going to learn within an hour.
So that's the craziest that things have gotten for you guys is those two little stories.
Well,
there, huh?
Pretty peaceful life you're living up there in Indian River County, bro.
Sure,
I could think of something else. But yes, it's not like Dade County, and it's not. It's I don't have to become Dog the Bounty Hunter.
How about bail bondsmen in general? If when you see them depicted in television shows or movies, is it accurately done, or is there a lot of exaggerating that goes on?
A lot of exaggerating, yeah.
Right. Okay.
We're pretty much called scum. You know, they think of us as just people who let criminals out of jail. And
oh yeah, okay, I could see why. You know what, that really never occurred to me that kind of outlook of it could be made.
Well, I have to bond out. For instance,
have you ever been morally sort of torn about getting somebody out?
Well, if you get a call for a $250,000 bond for someone who supposedly, because you got to remember these people are innocent until proven guilty.
Very good.
Let's say it's a sexual harassment or you know, almost like
a molestation or something like that.
You
cringe.
In this day and age, kids know what they can do for, like, for instance, a stepfather. When we were kids, you would never think, oh, let's call the cops and say he touched me. A lot of times these cases get dropped, and so you can't assume because the charges are that serious that they're actually accurate. And that's why
people, fair enough.
That's why people get a day in court because, you know, anyone... You know,
could be accused of anything anytime.
Stepchild could easily say he fondled me, and they're going to believe that person, and they're going to take him off the jail and put a very hefty bond on him. But he, you know, a lot of times they get dropped because there's just not enough evidence to proceed. And you know, in this day and age, these kids know that they, if they want to, you know, mess someone's life up.
So what I'm getting from what you're telling me is that, in your experience, more of the allegations made on sexual-related charges like that, more times than not, the charges are dropped.
More times than not. I think once, and it was a very large bond, he got convicted, and he's serving lots of time. I don't think he's going to live to see the day. But most of the time, they get dropped because it's all false accusations.
Right.
And not only that, it ruins that kind of charge will make the newspaper, put on the news, and there's never a retraction, you know.
Oh yeah, that and they, person, don't, they won't cover
person,
the
that person is chastised for a false accusation for years to come. Might have to move.
Now, what about the other extreme where you've gotten a call to bail somebody out that's been held for even more serious charges? Not that that's not serious, but you know, we're talking about like the murder charges. Anything that really kind of scared you to think, "Wow, we're putting this guy back out on the street"?
Well, murder charges a lot of times don't get bonds.
Okay, good. That's a good point.
And if they're entitled to them, but it depends. We haven't had one, I don't think, personally with our business. But yeah, definitely. If I believed he was guilty, then yeah, I would have definite moral problems. But
I guess you could kind of put my question in the stupid question category.
No, not at all. It's just...
Because
you got to remember, everyone who gets arrested is supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, and it's not always that case.
Right.
That goes without saying.
But no bond is no bond. That's just if bond is posted, then you know there's nothing anybody can do.
Right. And in the area that I'm at, we also have a problem with a lot of illegal immigrants because we have the citrus areas up there, up in Fellsmere, and they're constantly getting arrested for having no driver's licenses because they're scared to get them.
Right.
Because they, you know, and when they get arrested, they usually end up with immigration holds and they end up getting sent back.
I see.
So there's a huge immigration issue up there. And a lot of times they're unbondable because they just get held by immigration and sent down to Chrome and sent back to Mexico.
So sometimes you don't even have to get involved in that kind of thing.
Well, no one wants to go back to Mexico, so we're not usually that scared they're going to run back to Mexico. It all depends on what they're facing. A lot of times people get scared when their lawyers scare them.
Right.
When someone hears they could be facing 5 years in prison, you know, it's an
eye-opener. They'll listen to their lawyer.
Well,
if they hear that, right.
But the, you know, once they know what they're could possibly be facing, then the risk, my risk goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have a very small percentage of skips, but you know, the risk grows up when they hear what they're going to be, you know, what the plea bargain is going to be, and then you have to kind of worry about those large bonds, whether they're going to show up or not.
But you enjoy your business. You like doing what you're doing, right? It's a fun rewarding sort of. You're serving a purpose. You're doing a very diligent job, and it's something you really enjoy at this point, right?
It's not enjoyable to be woken up at 5 o'clock in the morning and have to bond someone out for a DUI. But you know, it's satisfying. It's gratifying. I only have to work 3.5 days a week.
There you go.
Which you know, definitely it's the weekend,
right?
But the rest of it, I have a lot of time, free time, to do the other things I love to do.
During the week, right, yes. Which is a perfect time that for us to segue into that, is that it's very interesting how you spend a lot of that spare time that you get. Now, you work mostly during the weekends, and it totals out to three and a half days a week. So the rest of the time, you're living in Vero Beach and coming to South Florida as a Florida Marlins season ticket holder, Miami Dolphins season ticket holder, Florida Panthers season ticket holder. Obviously, you don't get to go to all the games because of work, but you're turning a lot of great people and family members and friends onto tickets and great, great seats all the time. You're quite the sports fan. Of course, you started up in New York. Let's go with what were your teams when you were growing up in New York?
Well, as you know, I'm from Flushing, Queens.
Okay.
And I grew up a huge Met fan.
Okay, big Mets fan.
And
you cried when Shea Stadium was torn down.
I was lucky enough to be at the last game ever at Shea Stadium.
Like you should.
And I had tears in my eyes walking out of there. As a Marlin fan, I did go to the last game at Shea dressed as Tom Seaver in a Tom Seaver authentic jersey.
Nice.
Besides the fact that we knocked the Mets out of the playoffs that game, and I would have probably got kicked at my ass kicked if I would have wore a Marlin jersey.
So I'm going to guess your Mets... Jets.
I was a Jet fan till the early 70s. Actually, I was a Dolphin fan living in New York.
That's odd. Like my brother was,
well,
too.
Well, you know what? A lot of my friends, my friend across the street was a Minnesota Vikings fan.
Yeah.
I always played Larry Zonka. He was Fran Tarkington.
There you go.
And a lot of people in the neighborhood rooted for other teams.
That's true.
Not everyone really was a Jet fan. And I didn't really have any friends that were Giant fans. So
okay.
Because
you were on the island side.
But I was a New York resident loving the Dolphins, and I when I moved to Florida in 76, I was very excited to be moving down to where the Dolphins played.
Very cool.
I was very excited about that.
Rangers,
big time Rangers.
Knicks, I guess, too.
Knicks and Nets.
And Nets.
Nets played on Long Island, and I got to watch Dr. J as a kid.
Okay.
Up close and personal.
And you've that's very cool. So you're giving away your age there. So you've been able to travel around the country to visit all kinds of baseball stadiums, hockey arenas, football stadiums. Have you seen every ballpark in the major leagues now?
I'm more than halfway there. I try to do at least two or three.
That sounds like it would be an endless kind of thing, though, because by the time you got to the end of your list here,
they keep building new
stadiums. There'd be another new one, right?
Well, there are actually not too many left.
Okay.
The Marlins are probably the last team that really needs a new stadium, except the Oakland A's. After that, everyone's got a new stadium.
So of all the places you visited, all the ballparks you've seen, which one made you go, wow, the most?
Probably Wrigley. Or actually now the new Yankee Stadium. That is, without a doubt, the nicest stadium on the planet.
Awe-inspiring?
Yes.
Really?
It's a rip-off, but it's the nicest stadium.
A rip-off of what?
Oh, they just charge too much for the seats.
Oh, a rip. I thought you meant they stole the idea from another stadium.
Well,
okay,
yeah, their own, which was a good idea.
Right.
They tried to model it after the original Yankee Stadium.
Just ridiculously expensive?
Well, yeah. They priced people out who have had those seats forever. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a sad situation up there. They haven't figured out the pricing details yet, but
in Wrigley Field, I've been fortunate enough to visit too. That is pretty amazing to be there. So, but you've seen Fenway, you've seen. You get to see Candlestick Park before they stopped playing there?
No, I did not.
Okay.
But I still have a chance to do that the next time the Dolphins play out there against the 49ers.
Why, they're still playing in Candlestick Park?
It's called Monster Park now.
I had no idea that was still the same building. Okay.
Yeah, the 49ers still play there, so
about
I could still go there. I passed by it when I was out in San Fran.
So what are the, any like immediate plans to make some cool visits to cool stadiums? Anything booked and planned at this moment?
At this moment, with baseball season almost over, I just got back from New York visiting Citi Field.
From where?
From New York. Everyone practice with me.
That was a pretty good one. It's a different, than, see, the stereotypical imitation is New York, but nobody really actually says it like that. So I'm saying New York is how you're saying it.
Okay. No, I'm New York.
New York.
New York.
Okay, go ahead. Anyway, carry on. Just like it. I'm just like picking it apart.
It's okay. I've been used to it my whole life.
What were we saying now? Immediately, so coming up, we've got football season starting. Are you planning any trips out of town to go into any cool stadiums, arenas?
To be honest with you, I don't do too many road Dolphin games.
Okay.
It's because I work weekends, and I have to ask somebody else to cover for me on a Sunday. So I'm lucky enough to have...
See an occasional home Dolphin game.
I get to see all the home games. To ask for any extra time off to go to away games would be a little much, you know. But as far as baseball is concerned, I two or three trips a year, try to get all the new stadiums that I can in.
And you've got your new seats secured for the new stadium for the Marlins.
Yes.
Do we want to talk about the Marlins for a little bit, about your frustration with them right now? Do you want to keep it to yourself?
Well, I think everyone who might be in the South Florida area can understand the frustration about the Marlins. Two World Series in a short period of time, lots of ownership issues. Hard to be a Marlin fan right now. But
you're kind of I don't know if this is something that you wanted to talk about publicly, but you were saying how you recently discovered that they probably all right, let's put it this way, that the arguments that the fans have been making that the team hasn't been spending as much money as they could have spent are pretty much valid arguments.
Well, weren't denied.
Okay.
They were not denied. There was a lot of spin put on it, and judging by what I've seen, the stadium's empty. To think that we were making money, you know, yeah, it's hard to believe, but we were getting so much from the revenue sharing that we were not putting back on the field as we're supposed to, and then we were forced to at the beginning of the year. They made us spend money.
So these, whatever they did money-wise, is being scrutinized at this, like as we speak.
Well, yeah, and to be opening a new building in 2012, you shouldn't really be upsetting your fans right about now.
No, I don't think it's
a great
idea.
No.
A frustrating situation whenever you hear in sports the higher-ups come back at you with an argument about such as the one we're making with, well, you know, when at the end of the day, it is a business and we have to, you know, profit, but... You know, it's a business, but you're also, you know, you're trying to be competitive, and part of being competitive is doing the steps it takes to be competitive and taking a risk. I mean, you got to do that, and I mean, it's slowly evolving. That whole dynamic of sports, Major League Sports, is just kind of dissolving a little bit, I think, and it's turning more into a strict by-the-book business as it is from franchise to franchise instead of, you know, let's go out and win one, whatever it takes.
Well,
you agree to that to some extent?
Well... what I've seen is that the Marlins have proved that you don't have to have a $1 billion payroll to win.
That's true.
And I've watched many teams, Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, spend a lot of money and come up with nothing every year.
Right.
Yankees, okay, they bought it last year.
Right.
The Marlins have been a competitive winning or a 500 team since Lurie has taken over. And on a very low budget. So,
You know, what you're saying right now is sort of kind of, you know, it goes against the argument that you can be frustrated with them not spending the money, but you're also kind of making the point for them that, hey, in 03 and in 97, we won championships with a team that was, you know, very low paid, and they got their morale level up somehow, some way, and that's something you can't really pay for. So, in essence, I mean, it's kind of a good point that they're, you know, keeping things minimal because they've done it before like that. So,
well, they've been using the excuse. Well, look, we don't have the fan base. I mean, first of all, they have the highest TV ratings out of most, I think, all of Major League Baseball. Most people, we have the most fan watching the game, but they're just not coming out.
Yeah, because they're sweating and they don't want to go to that ballpark.
But to say that we don't have good fans or we don't have enough fans is wrong, because it's proven by Major League Baseball that we have a very high TV viewership. It's just no one wants to come down to that football stadium to see a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, and when the new stadium opens, I do believe they'll put a much better product on the field, but they can't wait till then to start doing that.
Now they got to do something. They got to show the fans that they're at least a little bit into it. Okay. Just a few minutes left. Do we want to spend a minute or two, even less than a minute, on the Panthers' upcoming season? What do you think?
Better make the playoffs.
This season?
Well,
I wouldn't expect it, my friend.
Since they haven't done much, I wouldn't expect it either. But they, that's to say the least, it was hard enough being a Marlins fan. Now, the Panthers, that's a different story altogether.
I think the Panthers kind of have a luxury this season of being overshadowed by the Heat in perfect timing. Because, I mean, you got Dale Talon's first year. You want to rebuild a little bit. You got to make some strategic moves. You got to take a look at some of the new players for a full season. So, you know, maybe it is a good year to be overshadowed by LeBron James. Maybe the Dolphins will have some success and put the Panthers even farther back on the back burner, which I think right now would be a blessing in disguise for that team. Let them have this year to rebuild, and then next year the fans can scream at them to make the playoffs or else. You agree?
Well, I just want to see a movement towards that. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think.
I think we are.
Don't think. I saw more upper management and ownership moves than I have any players come, you know, onto the team.
Probably just as important, though. I think.
Well, yeah, we do need to straighten out the front office, but
right.
A nice free agent signing would have been
It would have been nice, but you know,
got to have someone to fill the seats.
These guys are experts and they're supposed to know more than we do about that stuff, so I guess we'll let them do their jobs, right?
Right.
Well, and we'll see what happens. All right, so the last few minutes of this interview with Stuart Barnett, we're going to talk about, we got into the bail bond stuff and we got into sports. Look for him at an arena near or far away from you. And you're also big into music. You've got an incredible collection of guitars. You're a smoking guitar player. You're recognized from all the 80s heavy metal fans in South Florida. I remembered you playing around. What were the bands you played in back then?
I didn't play in South Florida in any heavy metal bands. I was in a band called Marat. We used to play up in Long Island and Queens. And
But you played down here.
Not in the clubs.
Oh, just played around.
I just played around. I spent most of the 80s in New York.
Okay, gotcha.
I moved back to New York in 85, and I played.
You moved back to where?
New York.
Okay.
I got to make sure I'm saying that right.
There it is. I just want plenty of sound clips for me to practice.
The few times that me and you played, I was just.
I thought you were in one of the rival bands.
I was in a cover band from 2001 to 2003, right before I moved to Vero Beach to be a bondsman.
Gotcha.
And we were very well, responded around here. We just, I decided I needed to make real money, and the only way to do that was to move up. So I had to quit playing music, which is something I've been doing since I was a baby.
Right. Well, you didn't quit completely because you still pick up guitars.
No, I play every day.
Oh, there you go.
I just. It's hard. I don't drink anymore, so being out in clubs and smoky bars trying to sing in front of people who really aren't paying attention to you that much, been there, done that. I know you still love to do it.
Yeah.
And it's still fun. I'd still love to do it if under the right circumstances, but
I'm lucky. I got the right circumstances, and I get to do it just often enough to get it out of my system, you know?
You know, like I said, I work on the weekends. There's not many opportunities to play during the week, and in Vero Beach, there's no scene for it. So I enjoy just playing by myself along with some of my favorite old music from the past.
Right.
And that's fun for me.
That's cool. And it makes you feel like a teenager.
And yeah, and if I was to play in a band, it would not even be for the money. It would be just for the fun. And that's
right.
That's all it is for me.
And how many guitars do you own at this time?
I believe I'm up to 21.
And your all-time favorite, gun to your head, which is your most prized possession?
My orange sunburst Les Paul standard.
Of course.
Yes.
Cherry sunburst? Orange sunburst.
Orange sunburst.
Okay, so it's lighter colored than Jimmy Page's.
Yes.
Okay.
It's more like an Ace Frehley colored Les
Paul. And it's like a Les Paul custom?
Les Paul standard.
A Les Paul standard. Very cool.
I've owned about 5 Les Paul standards, never a custom.
Okay.
I've always liked the standards better for some reason.
Okay. What is the difference, the main difference? I should know that.
The neck
Shame
is,
on me
the
for
neck,
not knowing.
The neck is just... not, I just always had, I had a standard since I was 70, since 77. So I always loved that feel of that neck. And I've never strayed from
nothing it. Nothing like the sound of a Les Paul through a Marshall, right?
No, not at all. Nothing.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Nope.
All right, if you look at the photo that we have on today's page for the Barnett Bail Bonds, you'll see Stu is the one to the far left on the picture. And you can contact him there if you're ever in trouble in Indian River County.
Actually, anywhere in the country, believe it or not.
Ah, how about that? So anywhere in the country, you can get in touch with Barnett Bail Bonds and they'll take care of him. Just tell them that you're a friend of the Bill Murphy Show and you'll get extra special treatment.
You'll always get extra special treatment at Barnett Bail Bonds. 24/7, 365 days a year.
Well said. 5 o'clock in the morning. That's Stu's favorite time to be woken up.
Yeah, too, please wake me at 5.
Get in trouble in the middle of the night.
Yes, and get a DUI. You can't get out for 8 hours, but you won't believe me because you're drunk.
Stuart Barnett, tune in again tomorrow for a new edition and Friday for another Music Friday.
Log on each weekday for another edition of the Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, send an email to Murph@BillMurphyShow.com. That's MURPH at BillMurphyShow.com. A Murphonics Media Production.